couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Let Him Go, Kindred, The Dark and the Wicked, Call Me Brother, and Triggered. All new movies in the theaters this week. I'll also be talking about some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Jay and Silent Bob Reboot as a listener suggestion. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Well, it's the news, and you know that means I want to talk to you guys about the presidential election. I'm just kidding. I don't want to talk about the presidential election at all. This has been talked about enough this week. Let's talk about something different, even if they're not like super fun and exciting movies. Let's talk about something other than politics. Let's talk about some news that's actually happening in the movie world. And to that point, I was actually toying with the idea of doing, oh, should we do what politics movies, favorite president movies? I just watched Dreamscape this week, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. I know it's a corny movie. It came out in 1985. I was like 13 at the time. And it was one of the first PG-13 movies ever made or ever released. I think Red Dawn was first. I think this might have been the second one. And I remember going to see it, and I remember being 13 at the time going, I can go in and see the PG-13 movie. And that one has a president in it. Eddie Albert plays a president. It deals with very 80s issues of nuclear holocaust and such. But, you know, I had a thought of going, maybe I should do movies about presidents. And I'm like, nope. The last thing people want to hear is presidential politics. This show right now, especially, and I know that at times when politics collides with movies, I've talked about adjacent political stuff, but I'm not going to talk about it this time because, oh my God, it's everywhere right now. So let's talk about another piece of news. I didn't even realize this was happening because I wasn't paying attention to Twitter on this, and I wasn't paying heavily attention to the movie The Witches. I remember watching it in last weekend, the new one with Anne Hathaway and Octavia Spencer. And if you recall from my review, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good adaptation of the original movie. I thought it's what a remake should be. Well, apparently, and I missed this controversy completely, there was a huge backlash from the disabled community. Or I don't know if it was a huge backlash, but it was a backlash. Anything on Twitter can be a huge backlash. It could be 15 people, but you never know. But people started complaining, essentially, that the witches, as depicted in the movie, were insensitive to those with disabilities, in particular limb disabilities. You know, if you've been injured, maybe you're missing appendages, or you're maybe missing fingers or part of an arm, or even just part of your arm is disabled to the point that you can't use it as an abled person would. And since then, like Anne Hathaway's come out and apologized, and Warner Brothers Pictures has come out and apologized. And this is one of those where I honestly have to stand back, and I think this is blowing it a little bit out of proportion. Now, for the record, generally, I have come to the conclusion over my many years on this planet that you don't listen to the people who aren't offended as to why they should be offended. So, like, if there's a movie and black people, for example, take offense to it, you don't need a white person explaining, no, that shouldn't be offensive to black people. And similarly, if you're Native American or if you're a woman, you don't need a man telling you you shouldn't be upset by it. Or if you're Jewish and you're offended by it, you don't need a Gentile explaining to you that it's not offensive. I think part of it is there needs to be a certain degree of intent to make it actually stick. I do not think that Robert Zemeckis and the people at Warner Brothers were trying to cause problems for disabled people. And this reminds me of a time I saw a post. It was several years ago about Halloween costumes. And it says, be careful what you wear and it might be insensitive. You know, like the classic example, don't dress like an Indian. Don't put a feather in your cap and look like a Thanksgiving decoration as a Halloween costume because it's offensive to Native Americans. And I'm like, I get that. Don't dress as a hobo because it's offensive to homeless people. And in that post, I remember it railing against one of the costumes was Superman. because Superman's super, he's strong, and he's physically fit, and he can endure any sort of physical problem. And they said, well, that's an ableist costume. It's diminishing to people who are either in wheelchairs, who don't have the ability to be as fit, you know, either they have conditions or whatever. And I'm like, oh, come on. That's, I think, taking it too far. I think that's where you take the offense too far. And I think that they've taken the offense too far in this one. They're trying to make the characters not like humans, but they have to be able to disguise themselves as humans. So yeah, their limbs or whatever. And even if, and I've never read the book, but I remember going back to the original movie and they talk about that witches don't have toes and they just have sort of these flat feet. And that's how you can tell them apart. And apparently in the original book, they're monstrous. So, I mean, that would be like saying, we're offended at movies with witches if they have warts on their nose because people have warts or people have giant moles that have hair growing out of it. And it's not their fault. No, it's not their fault, but you know, that's what people sometimes do. I mean, what are you going to do? Like the original witches with Angelica Houston, she's bald. I mean, is that against people who have alopecia? Seriously. I mean, I think there is a certain point where you got to dial back the offense. And I don't think that they were trying to say, because they weren't saying that these creatures had gotten all caught in an industrial accident. That's just the way they were grown and they were monstrous. Any more than in the Harry Potter movies, Voldemort is not against people who don't have proper noses. I don't know. I think this is taken a little bit too far. So that's my take on The Witches. I mean, I thought it was a fine movie. I thought it was a fun film. Watch it on HBO Max. It's good. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Stardust, which comes into theaters on November 25th. It's from IFC, and it's the story of David Bowie.
I think you're going to be the biggest star in America. This is a Queen family rock station, so keep it safe.
Tell me about the new album.
Well, what's it all about?
It's about the years I spent dressing in women's clothes and getting laid.
You want to know why it's not working? If anyone dares to ask you about your actual work, you just do the mystical mime act.
There is no authentic me.
Well, then be someone else.
Now, I liked David Bowie a lot. It was funny. I was never a huge contemporary fan. I grew up in a world where David Bowie existed. I mean, he only died a couple years ago. And I remember seeing Labyrinth in the theaters, and I remember listening to his music, and I remember some of the songs that would be released. I was never a huge music guy, so I didn't have a whole lot of albums as a kid. But I've appreciated David Bowie as he's grown older. I was too young for the Ziggy Stardust days, which was in the 70s. And this is really what it's about. It's more about his development of this Ziggy Stardust character and how he used that to his benefit as a celebrity. I don't know. I'm still not sold on the guy who plays him yet because he just doesn't feel or look, rather. He's got a decent Bowie impression, but he doesn't quite click. And I thought it would be interesting, but when I watched the trailer, I was like, this isn't even as exciting as Rocket Man. So who knows? Well, we'll see in a couple weeks. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Midnight Sky, which is coming out on Netflix on December 23rd.
We're not receiving anything.
That puts our last contact with Mission Control at
3 weeks.
Why is it so quiet?
That's Ether. It's a spaceship that we hoped would be our future. I have to warn them about the conditions on Earth. There is an antenna that's stronger than ours. We get to that antenna, they'll hear us.
This is George Clooney as a guy in the future after some cataclysm has happened on Earth, some sort of climate cataclysm. And he's trying to reach this ship that was trying to find a new planet for the human race to live on. And George Clooney, and I'm assuming it's his daughter or granddaughter, because he's looking pretty old in this movie, they have to go to this outpost to try and contact them. It looks like an interesting science fiction movie. I mean, I've enjoyed these kind of films. I'm looking forward to this one. This looks like it might be kind of interesting. It might be a little bit harrowing. It just all depends on how much they hand-wring about the human emotions. I hate to tell you, that's kind of how I look at this one. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Dark and the Wicked and Triggered.
Shake that.
And welcome Fridays at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. We're actually, all of these movies, I think in some way, shape, or form, all of the movies I'm talking about are going to be in theaters. Now, obviously, theaters are not open widely. They're not open at 100%. Things might start to contract again now that coronavirus is kind of ramping up its spread. But you can still see a lot of these in theaters, or a lot of them are also available on demand if you so choose. And it's funny, I have a friend, he's in the Broadcast Film Critics Association. I saw him make a point. He's like, nobody wants to go to a restaurant that only serves beet salad. And I think he's got a great point there, that part of the problem that theaters are facing right now is nobody wants to go to the theaters if all they're showing are independent films that you can get on demand. If you don't put the burgers and the steaks and the lobster and the shrimp cocktail on the buffet, nobody wants to go to the buffet if all they're getting is beet salad. And you may love beet salad, but it may not be worth a $14.99 buffet just to get a plate of beet salad. And I think that's one of the things that theaters are facing. But, you know, right now, here's the beet salad opportunities. The first one is The Dark and the Wicked. A brother and sister find their parents, who live on a reclusive farm, haunted by a mysterious force near the end of their lives.
Your mom, she was saying things. She would sit right beside him, just whispering. But she wasn't talking to him.
I found Mom's diary.
What if she saw something out there?
Told y'all not to come.
This is, in essence, it's a horror movie, and not even in essence. I think through and through it's a horror film, and it always flummoxes me why people release horror films the week after Halloween. That just, to me, seems insane. I understand a Christmas movie, because that's what they did with that Robert Zemeckis Christmas Carol. That came out first weekend of November, and I remember the Nutcracker of the Four Realms, that one from Disney, that came out the first weekend of November. And I think last year you had Last Christmas, whatever, the one with Emilia Clarke and Henry Gould. That one came out the first weekend of November. And those are always weird for me to watch, because normally on a normal year when I'm going to screenings, usually they screen those before Halloween. So I end up watching these Christmas movies like on October 28th, which is an odd time to watch a Christmas movie. But still, releasing a horror film on like November 6th seems a little bit shaky, because you would have thought you would have gotten a bigger run-up leading up to Halloween, even though Halloween's kind of busy. It was pretty busy the last couple weeks. You know, everybody had events and parties, even if they were small or even if they were virtual. And then you had Halloween and trick-or-treat. So I think that's part of their deal is, oh, well, there's still horror fans after October. But in The Dark and the Wicked, it's a very slow-burn, grim, dark. I mean, it's almost nihilistically horror. It's like the blurb said, it's about this couple, and the father's bedridden. He's ill. He's infirmed in some way. And they've got a nurse coming in, and the mother, the woman, is taking care of him, but there's something in the house that seems to be insidiously getting into their head, working its way into them. And a son and daughter, who are brother and sister, live in different states, I think. Now they come back to take care of it. And it was interesting, as you know, I this last couple of years I was taking care of my father who had a stroke, and my sister and I, of course, were over there all the time taking care of him. So I know firsthand what it's like to give up part of your life to take care of an infirmed relative. And it's exhausting, and it's stressful, and it gives you mixed feelings of guilt and anguish and all those sort of things. And so I know exactly what that's like. But the thing is with this movie, the problem is there's no relief or release from the overbearing dread and existential loneliness the film carries. Because the son and the daughter, there's no shred of humor or friendliness or good times with them. They're both very depressing and very dark and boring, and nothing really happens with them. And so when you have these horrific things happening to them, even on a psychological level, it's just like, well, how much lower can you make their likability? It's almost too much. Now, Xander Berkeley has a really interesting small role in here, and I think he's the best part of the movie, but they gloss over him so quickly. And there's some great scenes. Don't get me wrong. There are some great, chilling, crazy scenes. And this is done by the guy who did The Strangers, if you remember. They've done a couple sequels to that. But, you know, The Strangers from 2008 was a very heavy, dark, and almost nihilistic home invasion movie loosely based on some true events. While I loved the idea and I loved some of the atmosphere it shows and I loved the setting of it, it was just almost too much. The characters, you're just like, well, you know, yeah, it's sad that they're going, but they have such depressing lives. And it was funny, they at a certain point, they flash into the son's life with his family. And you're like, well, it looks like he's got a decent life. It sounds like he's got a normal life and, you know, they'll watch comedies on TV and joke around at home, but they don't even, there's no levity. There's no brightness in their day to day. And that when it makes it so dark, it's like, well, you can have a dark, depressing life or just super dark, depressing. So I'm going to have to say Dark and the Wicked kind of sucks just because it just overdoes the depression element of it, although it has some great elements to it for a horror film.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the movie Triggered. A group of friends from high school go camping only to become pawns in a sadistic game.
Been a long time since I taught all of you. So good to see you again. Tonight's your final lesson.
Is this like laser tag?
They're timers.
We're in the middle of the woods with Vaughn strapped to our chest.
Get this thing off of me!
What happens when these timers hit zero, huh?
He didn't tell you the rules.
What rules, Bobby?
We can steal each other's time to stay alive.
So the more you kill, the more time you get.
This is, in effect, an attempt to cross the slasher genre with torture porn genre, the Saw genre. First of all, there's so many people, and that's what you get when you have a slasher movie. Watch any of the Friday the 13th. There's like 118 different characters at the beginning because Jason's got to kill a whole bunch of them, and you got to have somebody left over. And that's one of the challenges that they always faced in the 80s with slasher movies is they had to populate the movie with a lot of teenagers so they could get killed. But when you write a screenplay to make people friends, you got to make them sort of be, you know, they got to be self-deprecating and they got to insult each other and make fun of each other. But you can't do it in a mean way or they just seem like a bunch of a-holes. And that's what this comes off as. They all just seem like a bunch of a-holes. Everybody's insulting each other. Everybody's mad at each other. Everybody's just kind of a jerk. And you're like, you know, oh, yeah, this person's educated and seems to be on her way to a decent job, but she's such a pretentious POS that you just don't want to have anything to do with her. You know, I don't like a movie where you don't like anybody and you can't get behind the characters. You're like, well, they could all blow up because the vests, they are on these vests and the vests, you can't unhook the vests. And when the time runs out, you explode. Part of the other problem with this film is it feels like the script was written in like 2003, 2004. And it just got made this year, but they didn't update any of the pop culture references. They're like referencing Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. And I mean, they're making references to stuff from the 90s. And I'm like, wait, I was just waiting for the Quentin Tarantino references to come. There was an art to the slasher film in the 80s. And people just think all we have to do is put a bunch of teenagers in and kill them. That's not what slasher movies were about. And at the same time, it's also trying to spin it with a Saw, but Saw was already kind of a take on the slasher movies. And they even name check Saw on the middle of it. I'm like, no, that's like laughing at your own joke, Bob Saget. I was not very impressed with Triggered. So I'm going to have to say it sucked.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Let Him Go and Kindred. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And we're going to talk about the big one for this week. And I say big one, kind of put that in air quotes. I mean, this is not a Marvel movie. It's not a Star Wars movie. This is the kind of movie that would have come out right around this time. This seems like exactly when this movie could have come out. But it wasn't expected to ever make, you know, $100 million. It was meant to make some cash in the theaters. And I think that's why they're keeping to it, because this movie doesn't look like it costs that much to make. And that's Let Him Go, which is, like I said, it's in theaters right now. It's going to be the biggest one in theaters this week. It's going to make a couple million dollars, maybe $10 million over its theatrical run, which, you know, may not have made much more than that. Anyways, Diane Lane and Kevin Costner star as a couple who travel across the country to track down their lost grandson.
We're trying to locate a Donnie Wee Boy. He married our son's widow.
Got our grandson with him.
You let it be known you're looking for a wee boy. I'll find you.
Go careful.
Come with us.
No.
He'd kill me. Him and his mother.
Your grandson. He's a wee boy now.
The movie takes place in the 70s, and of course it has Diane Lane and Kevin Costner as this old, I'm putting that in quotes, I don't think they're that old, they're older, but they're not that old, but this old married farm couple, he is a former sheriff, or a former lawman at least. And what I find interesting is Diane Lane and Kevin Costner played Ma and Pa Kent in the Man of Steel / Batman versus Superman movies. Unfortunately, in this movie, the son is not Superman, so he breaks his neck on a horse accidentally. I mean, it's one of those tragic farm accidents. And then his wife, who's got, they've got a little, like, an infant son who, she lives with them for a while, and the son grows up to be a couple years old. And then she gets remarried to this guy, and the guy's abusive to her. And then one day they just skip town and they leave. And Diane Lane, in particular, her character is like, no, I need to go find my grandson. At the very least, I want to hang out with him. I want to have some meeting time with him. And what's interesting is this sort of has some connective tissue in terms of concepts and ideas with the next movie I'm going to talk about, Kindred. But I get it. You know, when you're a grandparent, you have no legal rights to the kid. I mean, the kids, as I understand it, in American law, the kid is controlled by the parents, and the grandparents have no say whatsoever. For better or for worse. I mean, in this one, you're like, oh, wouldn't it be, it's a shame they don't have control over it. But there's plenty of situations where grandparents having control over what you do with your kids would be a problem. And ultimately, it takes place in the 70s. It's based on a book I've not read, so, you know. But the story, it's like an old Western. And that's kind of how they set it up. You remember how Hell or High Water was essentially a modern version of a Western? It still took place out West, and it had a lot of the elements to it, but instead of driving horses, they were driving cars. So in this one, Diane Lane is pushing to go find this kid and at least have a relationship with it. And to her credit, she just wants to connect with them. She just wants to visit. And she's essentially saying, hey, can I come out and visit my grandson now and then? But the family this girl had married into is one of those dirtbag families. You know, every now and then in a lot of small towns and a lot of places, there's a family and it's very big, and sometimes they have power because maybe they own land or they own a factory or they just happen to be enriched somehow. And they're just bad people, and they control things because they can. And that's an example of life just plain being unfair. And Diane Lane's character decides to push up against them. And Leslie Manville plays the matriarch of this clan, the Wee Boys. And she's great. I mean, almost to the point where she almost steals it away from Diane Lane. But Diane Lane does that understated, very, you know, somber performance, but very directed. And I love Diane Lane anyways. I can never see her as an old woman. I dearly love Diane Lane. Kevin Costner kind of phones in his performance. He does a lot of Westerns, so he just kind of plays that modern version of himself. And when I say modern, granted, it's like 50 years ago that this takes place. And I think they do that to avoid having stuff like cell phones and GPS that can mess things up. But overall, I mean, it's a good movie. It's a great sort of what would you do kind of movie. If there's any real problem I have with this film, is part of it is it's uncomfortable to watch at times because it's not always pleasant things happening. But that's movies. So some people love that kind of stuff. The other thing I have and this was a complaint I did have with it. If you know you're going into the lion's den, don't go in there in your boxer shorts. If you're going into the lion's den, bring a chair and a whip. You know what I mean? At the very least, you know, as suspicious as Kevin Costner's character is of a lot of this stuff, he seems to be willing to not protect himself from the get-go. There's a certain level of suspicion and worry and anticipation that they should have, especially for the job he used to do. But overall, I mean, it works for sort of that modern Western. I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Kindred. A pregnant woman finds herself trapped by her dead fiancé's mother in an attempt to have access to their baby.
We've decided that we're moving to Australia.
I'm not taking my grandchild.
We need a fresh start.
You cannot walk out on this place!
The funeral's tomorrow.
I'm gonna need some of my things.
I sent Thomas over yesterday. Everything you want will be in your wardrobe.
How is the baby?
Maybe you should see another doctor.
Don't worry. Everything's under control.
You're sick.
Don't you realize you're the one who's sick?
Obviously, you can already see from just the blurb and the trailer that there's some connective tissue with Let Him Go. You've got a grandparent who is trying to keep a certain degree of control over the grandkid. But what's interesting is in Let Him Go, the good guys are the grandparents, and in Kindred, the bad guy is, or the bad woman, is the grandparent. And the big thing that's different is Kindred is a British movie. So it takes place in the UK. And I've not had to deal with custody issues, but it does make you wonder, you know, even just as an American citizen, I can look and say, well, I don't know if America will allow this for the legal aspect. And that's why I think it's important for Let Him Go to be in the early 70s, because I don't know what the child rights and the grandparents' rights and parental rights or anything like that was. Now, in Kindred, I don't know anything about the UK. I don't know whether the UK is good about this kind of stuff or bad. So it could be an absolute nightmare to try and keep control of your own kid. The grandparents might have a say in that. And that's a little bit scary when it comes to Kindred. So you don't find yourself second guessing. You'd be like, well, maybe that's the way it is in the UK. Who knows? There's some interesting things about this movie. First of all, the grandmother is played by Fiona Shaw, who's, you most recognize her as Harry Potter's aunt in the Harry Potter movies, but she's been in dozens of things. And I love her as an actress. She's brilliant. She's done everything from campy to serious. And she plays, you know, very formidable, angry grandmother who is set on her ways. And of course she's wealthy, so she has this estate, and she basically traps the would-be daughter-in-law in the place and keeps control of her. And it has these shades of Rosemary's Baby, where she's administering drugs and medicines to her for, well, you don't really know why. And then there's a doctor who's involved, who's on her payroll, but it's not necessarily the doctor that the girl approves. And again, here's another thing. I don't know anything about the British medical system. I don't know if you could do that. I mean, I know in America, you can get up and walk out of a doctor's office, and unless they really think you're in danger to yourself, they're not going to commit you. And at that point, they need a court order. But I don't know what the UK is like. I don't know if a doctor can just sign this off and say, nope, put her in a box. You know, it's a slow burn. It's creepy, and it plays off of a lot of gothic elements to it because it's in this old house. It's not a ghost story, and it doesn't have anything spiritual. So, like, when I say it has shades of Rosemary's Baby, there's no Satan having sex with Mia Farrow or anything like that. But it is disturbing, because you think, what would you do? Because part of the thing is, when this girl's fiancé dies, she's stuck there, and she can't leave, and she feels like she can't leave. So that shows how trapped she is, and I think that that's effective. I think it works as a movie, and it's a little bit slow, so I wasn't a huge fan of the pacing, but I liked a lot of what it was trying to do. So I'm going to have to say Kindred kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to have a review of Call Me Brother and talk about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and finish things up with Call Me Brother. After being apart due to their parents' divorce, a brother and sister find complicated feelings when they are reunited for a weekend as teenagers.
What's the deal with you and that hottie glazed in a sweet layer of polyester in insecurity?
That's my sister. What? That's Lisa?
What are you doing here?
Visiting my dad and brother for the weekend.
I hope you don't mind sharing a room.
For God's sakes, you kids used to bathe together.
You think you'd be as nice to any girl as you are to me?
You like your room?
Yeah, it's fun having a roomie.
Especially a roomie you can't have sex with.
This is a much smaller movie. I mean, obviously, Let Him Go, you're going to find pretty much in any open theater in town. This one you might be able to find. this one is a much smaller film. The guy who's involved in it, one of the actors, he's apparently on Saturday Night Live. Now, I have not watched Saturday Night Live for years. I mean, with the exception of a sketch here or there, you know, like a couple years ago when that David S. Pumpkin sketch hit, I tracked that down and watched it and loved the heck out of it because I'm that kind of person. And but generally, I don't watch much Saturday Night Live. I will watch that one sketch that makes a lot of buzz or, you know, something that goes viral. But generally, I'd say 98% of what airs on Saturday Night Live in a given season, I skip now. So I don't know who this guy is. But the story is it's this family. It was a family of a father and mother. And they had a brother and sister. And then they got divorced. And the mother took the sister and the father took the brother. And it's been years since they've even seen each other. The last time they saw each other, they were little kids, prepubescent, so to speak. And now here they are as teenagers, and not just, you know, 14-year-old teenagers. They're like 17. You know, they're essentially full size. You know, I got a son who's 17 years old. He's full size. Heck, I got a son who's 12 and a half and he's almost full size. He may not be full size. He's going to be enormous when he gets big. He's going to be enormous when he gets older. But these kids, you know, obviously they're in the puberty area. They've got hormones in their system. And because they didn't grow up with a sibling in the house, or in particular, a sibling of the opposite sex in the house, they're having very confusing feelings. And that's the most uncomfortable thing about this, because it does deal with that taboo because they have to share a room, because they shared a room when they were kids. But that's not something you want to just be thrust into when you haven't seen your sibling for 5 or 6 years. And so there's a lot of mixed signals and mixed emotions and uncomfortable emotions. And I think the purpose of this movie is just to put it out there and be awkward and to make people squirm. And I get that. I know some people are like, well, that's the point of a movie. It's to challenge your ideas and hold a mirror up to the universe and such. The problem is, to me, it's like it's trying to make light of it. And I'm like, well, this is kind of a creepy, almost, I mean, yeah, it's taboo. And it's not like I'm like overtly offended by it, but it is taboo. I mean, it is something that is uncomfortable to dissect, because this kind of stuff goes disastrously wrong in the real world and you get horrible things happening. And then on top of it, it's the two of them interacting with their friends. And what's weird about it, apparently it takes place over a weekend. It feels like she's living there for 3 weeks. The movie does drag. And the script feels like it's been written by somebody. It's almost like a first-time script. It has a lot of this filler with these sleazy side characters that are friends of their friends being stupid and gross to each other, just insulting each other. And like, oh, and then they have this group that's going and they're taking drugs all the time. And you're like, oh, come on. It just circles the drain with that a lot. And to me, this wasn't necessarily an entertaining movie. It felt like the kind of stuff I used to watch when I was doing independent film and you had to do some sort of exhibition with other independent films. And so you had to sit through their crappy films to watch yours with an audience. That's kind of what I felt like when I was watching this film. So I was not a big fan. So I'm going to have to say Call Me Brother kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is from a listener recommendation. And I apologize. Honestly, I forgot to write down who recommended this. So it's somebody from somewhere. They contacted me, and I don't think they contacted me via email. I think they contacted me via Twitter. So my apologies, you got buried in my at replies. And I wrote it down on a list. I just didn't write down who suggested this. So if you're out there listening, thank you for the suggestion. I never watched the Jane Silent Bob reboot back when it was first released, because I wasn't going to pay $50 to see a four-walled showing of it. But I noticed it showed up on Amazon Prime, and I'm like, well, if I can watch Borat, I can watch this. So I watch it, and here's what it's about. Kevin Smith desperately tries to stay relevant by rebooting the ongoing adventures of his stoner characters, Jay and Silent Bob.
Identify yourselves!
I'm Jay, and this is my hetero life mate, Silent Bob!
Don't tell me you guys have no idea there's a new comic book movie being made of the old comic book movie you two are the basis for.
That movie sucked.
We got 3 days to get to Hollywood and stop this reboot from ever happening.
Boys, I had a baby.
Jay, brace yourself. You're about to meet our love child.
This is my daughter, Millennium Falcon.
What's funny is back in the mid-90s, late 90s even, I was a huge fan of Kevin Smith. I remember when Clerks came out. And by the way, do you know where I first heard about the movie Clerks? It wasn't from some independent website. I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh radio show back in 1994 or 1995, and he talks about how he stumbled upon this movie on pay-per-view, which was Clerks. And my family, I heard, this sounds like it might be a funny movie. And he was lambasting the movie itself, but then he said there was a certain sort of message he agreed with. But I think it's hysterical that it was Rush Limbaugh, of all people, that directed me to go see the movie Clerks. So I saw it, and I really enjoyed it. I loved Clerks. I thought Clerks was hilarious and brilliant and fantastic and subversive and entertaining. I'm not so much a fan of Mallrats. I thought Mallrats was a failed experiment and tried to retread Clerks a bit. I hated Chasing Amy for the exact reasons that is now not considered as good of a movie, because it was this white, straight, cis male who's mansplaining lesbianism to everybody. Then he did Dogma, which I thought was overrated. I thought it wasn't as deep as he thought it was. But I've liked his other movies. Actually, I liked Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which was almost 20 years ago. And then things kind of took a south turn. He did Zack and Mary Make a Porno. And, Tusk was a mess. Yoga Hosers was... I mean, it's almost worth seeing for how bad it is. So then this Jay and Silent Bob reboot came through. And I wasn't going to pay for it, but it was on Amazon, so I watched it. And you know what? The one word that comes to mind for me is pathetic. It's pathetic. I mean, it's Kevin Smith smoking tons of weed and trying to redo a sort of a last-ditch effort at being relevant, which was what Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was. And he tries to retread that movie. And then one of Kevin Smith's little games he plays is he's like, I like to throw out my own criticisms. I make fun of myself before somebody else can make fun of me. And he makes fun of the fact that he casts his daughter and everything. But his daughter's a terrible actor. Having seen her in many movies, she is not very good. And the only thing with occasional role here or there, almost her entire filmography is her father's films. And they try to make fun of both sides. On one hand, they make fun of it making like Kevin Smith's forcing her to do it all. And on the other hand, they make it like she's using him for nepotism. I go, well, what is it? What are you making fun of? Is it both? She's terrible in the movie. Everyone is pathetically old in this. And then the drug humor in this one, you can tell it's different from like the 20 years ago where, yeah, you know, there was pot humor and stuff, but this one is like, no, yeah, guys, let's all smoke pot and talk about how awesome it is. And that's kind of what the movie is. I mean, even Cheech and Chong just used the pot humor as a conduit to get into insane situations. They didn't just sit around and talk about how awesome pot was. And that's kind of what I feel like, because that's kind of what Kevin Smith has become. He has become this iconic 12-year-old who smokes pot all the time and isn't growing as an artist or in any sort of reputation. It was embarrassing to watch. I felt like I was watching a friend of mine at a bar trying to hit on a 23-year-old girl and just getting denied. There's one tender scene. There's one scene that's kind of neat, and that's with Ben Affleck. And that's just because Ben Affleck has screen presence and can manage the dialogue because he's a movie star. But the rest of it is just absolute crap. It's not worth checking out. I'm going to have to say it sucks.
It sucks.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Antebellum, Let's Scare Julia, Hard Kill, Game of Thrones in 4K, and V for Vendetta in 4K, and then a bunch of animated films that were nominated for the Oscar, including A Cat in Paris, Chico and Rita, and The Secret of the Kells. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Freaky, The Climb, and Fat Man. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.